Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the special Pac-12 preview edition for the 2022-23 season, which we are recording on October 14th and 15th, depending on what part of the world you're in, 2022. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcast, and tune in as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase, joined tonight by Nick, as always, and also by our sometimes guest, Zach, for the special conference preview. Nick, Zach, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, Chase. Good to be back. We've got a lot of really good college football tomorrow, but the focus will be on the Pac-12 this time. So really excited. And Zach, great to have you on as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, guys. Looking forward to talking some Pac-12 basketball, as always.
So we're getting closer and closer to the start of the season, as we've discussed in the last podcast, the last couple podcasts. And we're finally going to, you know, this is one of my favorite podcast of the season, so really take a deep dive into the different teams in the conference. And at the end of the we're going to go team by team. At the end, we'll each kind of give our prognostications on how the conference is going to finish in terms of standings. Last year, I think the consensus was that we were looking at potentially, you know, UCLA would be number one, and then there'd be a fight for number two between Oregon and USC. Turns out Arizona kind of came out of nowhere with Tommy Lloyd, snagged that number one spot. And the fight for number two was really between USC and UCLA. UCLA taking SC by one game, I think, in the conference standings. But so, you know, there's always surprise teams. There's been a lot of turnover, as there always is in the conference. We'll do another podcast that kind of just goes player by player for the, you know, our picks for all conference, things like that. But with this podcast, we want to focus on the teams and some of the turnover we've seen there. And so we're going to start up in the Pacific Northwest. And I think the way to do this is I'm going to start in Pullman with the Washington State program that has been, you know, markedly better the last few seasons under Kyle Smith as head coach. Washington State still hasn't gotten over the hump and gotten to the NCAA tournament, but it's a competitive team. You kind of have to bring it if you want to win. Last season, they're, you know, kind of my sneaky pick to finish fourth in the conference. They ended up finishing fifth, tied for fifth with Oregon. They actually finished pretty well in the KenPom computer rankings because they had all these very close losses, but they did end up with 15 losses on the season. It was a little bit of a strange personnel turnover at the end of the last year. So no Williams, who was kind of like going into the last season going to be their top player on the perimeter, had a very disappointing season, had a very low efficiency season. The two transfers they brought in, Michael Flowers and Terrell Roberts, especially Michael Flowers, had much stronger seasons on the offensive front. They're kind of the leaders on the team on the perimeter. And Noah Williams kind of fell out of favor, didn't really have a huge role in the team. He transferred at the end of the season. Both Flowers and Roberts left the pro. I mean, I think Flowers just signed up to play anymore. Flowers just signed up to play anymore. You know, Terrell Roberts, do we know what he's not on the team anymore. Do we know what happened with him?
I'm not sure about him. I think Flowers, he actually, last year was the COVID year for him. So I think he was done.
He was done, and, but Roberts, who had been
Roberts, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Been a Division Roberts II is at transfer. San Francisco now, I think, University of San Francisco.
There we go. So that answers the question. Zach, thank God we have you on this podcast. Okay. And then the other weird thing was that Ife Abagidi and Muhammad Gay both entered the transfer portal. This was kind of devastating. They have two potential NBA bigs, both entered the transfer portal. Abagidi ended up just deciding to go play for the G League Unite, which is supposed to be a team specializing for out of high players that prefer to skip going to college, but they want to spend 1 year. They have 1 year before they're eligible for the NBA draft. That's not the case with Abigidi. And for some reason, he's playing for the Ignite. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Gay decided to take himself out of the portal, and he returned to Washington State. So the Cougars are bringing in, you know, they lost quite a few really important players. They've brought in some new guys. In particular, they brought in Justin Powell, a point guard from Tennessee. They have a couple of international players from France they've brought in. They returned TJ Bamba and DJ Rodman, at different times I've really liked. Jakimovsky is back. He's always played against SC. He's always played tough. I think Deshaun Jackson, actually, who would be back, he had an injury. Then that's gonna hurt. But they did bring in a player named Diongu, who is like another like top 85 or so big man prospect. So they've been able to bring in a lot of high quality like bigs under Kyle Smith in recent years. Let's go, Zach. Let's go to you first. What are your thoughts on the transfer? You know, the transition of personnel at Wazoo. What's going on with this program? What do you expect to see from them this season?
I think this is a bit of a recovery year for Washington State. A little bit. I mean, you lose your four top minutes guys to various reasons. That's just a tough hill to recover. I think Washington State did a good job of getting some guys back. Justin Powell specifically is a really nice add. And I don't think Washington State will be bad this year. I just, you know, you're trusting Kyle Smith a little bit to be able to get the job done. And, you know, looking at the roster, they have a lot of guys who I think are going to be able to really defend, which I think is the big takeaway. I think Washington State may not be a pretty basketball team to watch this year, and then maybe a slightly worse basketball team than last year, but I think they're going to really defend with guys like DJ Rodman, TJ Bamba. I think Diongu, the read on him is that he's going to be able to block a lot of shots and play a lot of defense. He's a freshman, so we'll see kind of how that ends up actually going out in theory. But it's kind of my read right now. I think it's going to be a bit of a slugfest. It's going to be a lot of low-scoring games up in Pullman this year. But, yeah, what about you, Nick?
Yeah, I kind of have the same takeaway. And I think I kind of, like, trashed them a little bit on their last pod. But they actually have enough personnel to kind of remain competitive here. The swing guy is obviously Justin Powell. So Justin Powell, he averaged about 12 a game as a freshman at Auburn. And then for whatever reason, and he was talked about as a potential NBA prospect, for whatever reason, he transfers to Tennessee, can't really get on the floor, kind of behind Kendi Chandler and Zakai Ziegler, goes out and shoots 39% from the field, but he does shoot like a respectable 38% from three. For context, as a freshman at Auburn, he shot 44% from three on over four attempts. So pretty good volume. So he's kind of a swing guy. Like he, I think, has a chance to be their leading scorer. And they really need him to return to kind of that Auburn form as opposed to what he showed last year. And if he does, then you're maybe talking about a top like five team in the conference. But if he's kind of like more the Tennessee version, I think maybe you're looking at, you know, team number six or seven, something like that. But Rodman and Bamba are solid players. Jackson's a solid player. They have a bunch of kind of like, you know, high major like level guys, but no real superstar unless either Gay makes the next step or Powell can kind of elevate back to form.
Yeah, and I agree with you guys. I think, you know, the Powell situation is a little odd because obviously that one really strong year he had with Auburn was that one year that Auburn was really bad and actually had a losing record as their one down year, and they kind of just reloaded their entire roster after that. And I don't think Powell was part of the equation. Probably saw the writing on the wall, thought, oh, okay, well, Tennessee might have a spot for me. They didn't have a spot for him. So, I mean, I think he can be effective here. He's, you know, there's a lot of shots from the perimeter. And in some ways, I think, you know, the best thing to happen maybe for them was Noah Williams leaving because he just took a lot of bad shots and not very efficient. You know, Terrell Roberts was kind of iffy on efficiency, especially in the conference. So, you know, there's going to be fewer shots coming from the perimeter. And they're going to have to rely more on guys like Bamba and Rodman, who are really kind of like solid defensive players. It is going to be a slugfest for them to win. But yeah, I guess they're going to have to rely on a lot of shots coming from Powell. I do think, though, that they can kind of – I think they can actually probably get close to replicating their record of 12-8 in conference last season. I don't think that's like out of out of the question. So we'll see if that happens, but that would not shock me. Or actually was not 12-9, it was 11-9. So I would not be shocked by that. Another team that went 11-9 last season, it was a three-way tie here for fifth, Washington. Now, this is another – both these teams in the state of Washington have, like, kind of, like, drastic personnel turnovers. In the case of Washington, they're, you know, kind of like they're the guy that single-handedly, like, just dragged them to these victories and brought them into, like, respectability was Terrell Brown. Who was playing in his third different college in 3 years, had a really phenomenal season for Washington. It's pretty amazing considering, you know, that he had been on that last Arizona team for Sean Miller, kind of as a little bit of a role player, you know, and that team was not very strong. If you look at the players that had left that team, I mean, Sean Miller got fired, Ken Joe and Terrell Brown, and they leave the program. And then Tommy Lloyd's able to do what he did last year with what was left over. So there was a lot of talent on that in that program. Anyway, Terrell Roberts single-handedly kind of just like drags Washington along to a fairly respectable record. Clearly the best player on the team last year, in my opinion, or second best player after Brown was Emmett Matthews, who had been at West Virginia, and he transferred back to West Virginia, right? Was that the final decision?
Yeah. Boomerang. Yep.
Boomerang transfer. And then, you know, Nate Roberts was the big that got a lot of minutes down there. Not a great big, not very much doing on the offense. And here and there as a defensive player, pretty decent rebound rate, mainly because the rest of the players on Washington team couldn't rebound. He left too. So those guys are gone. Incoming players, we have Noah Williams coming in from Washington State. The big one to me is going to be Frank Kepnong coming in from Oregon, which I guess we can talk a little bit more about the Oregon situation there. And then Keon Brooks coming in from Kentucky. Also Braxton May coming in from Fresno. They still have Jamal Bay, who had a down year last year when he actually got more looks. PJ Fuller, who had you know previously been at TCU. Cole Bajam, I think I talked about, and they have freshman Corin Johnson coming in. So, you know, I'm expecting from what we were told, Noah Williams was sold on going there as a as could be the point guard, which to me seems like a crazy situation. So they're looking at it like a starting lineup of Noah Williams, PJ Fuller, Jamal Bay, Keon Brooks, Frank Kepnong. That's respectable starting five. I mean, that's clearly five like high major players. And then they still have guys like Bajama, Langston Wilson showed some a little bit last season, coming off the bench, Corin Johnson, the top recruit. So, I mean, look, Hopkins is just kind of like no longer is able to effectively recruit high school players to go to this program, but he's done a decent job. He's kind of like become the Northwest version of Bobby Hurley in the sense that Hurley's not really attracting top high school recruits either now, but he's getting guys out of the transfer market. And that's what Hopkins did. So I don't know. I'll start with you, Nick. What are your thoughts on how Washington's looking for the upcoming season?
So I think I'm going to be lower on this team than the consensus, just because the players they added outside of Kepnong are kind of more of the volume scorer type. And I'm a little skeptical that Keon Brooks can take the reins and be the leading scorer on this team. Like, I know they sold him on, you know, being the star and having a higher usage than he had at Kentucky, but I just don't know if he's a good enough shooter to do that efficiently and impact winning. Beyond that, I mean, the Noah Williams, PJ Fuller combination just seems like a disaster. Like, those players are both volume scorers and not really good shooters. So just the kind of guys that I wouldn't want getting major minutes on my team. Kepnong is a really nice ad. Like, I think he was underutilized at Oregon and might actually be the best player on this team. And Jamal Bay is kind of the, you know, classic role player who's like maybe high major good, but, you know, not, you know, a superstar or anything like that. So I actually like the Washington State team better than these guys, but, you know, these guys, I kind of think they're maybe eighth, ninth in the conference. I don't know, Zach, what do you think here?
Yeah, similar thoughts. I mean, the first thing that jumps off to me, right, is last year Washington was a very bad shooting team, 32% from three last year, and they didn't really do anything to rectify that. If anything, I think it's going to be worse. They really need Noah Williams to be better than he was last year, and I just don't know if in this system that's going to happen. Him and PJ Fuller as your backcourt combo is not exactly giving me a ton of confidence going into the year. Maybe Corin Johnson can do something. I was reading the other day some Washington basketball journalists are saying that he looks really good in practice. Who knows if that actually means anything? Everybody always looks good in practice, but that could be some remedy to the guard play help. I know he's kind of highly thought of. I do think defensively this team will be better than they were last year. I think they were ninth in KenPom defensively in the conference last year. Frank Kepnong is very, very good. I like Nick. I think he was underutilized at Oregon last year. And I think that him and Keon Brooks and Jamal Bey, that's just a lot of length and a lot of big dudes on the court. I think that should give them some defensive success to keep them above some of the other teams that I end up having them above. And then Kepnong and Brooks are good adds. I don't think that'll kind of get them to the top half of the conference per se, but I do think that it should keep them competitive, kind of floating around maybe 500 in Pac-12 play is kind of where I think. Question for you guys though, Mike Hopkins, if he doesn't have a good season, is this it for him at Washington?
I have to go back and look and see what the contract situation is there, because I know that was a major issue when they were looking a couple years ago at firing right. him, and they got him into this terrible longer term contract. The thing is, it actually, I think the seat was hotter, right, last season, going into last season, than it is going to this season. Because actually, you know, even though they didn't do anything great, they finished with a winning record in overall and in the conference, 11-9. So that was a kind of a major improvement considering where this team had been for now. They're still outside the top 100 in KenPom, but like as bad as they were in 2021, coming back and, you know, they were 5-15 in 2022 in the conference, 4-16 in 2021. So they did improve in conference play. So I think Hopkins might have bought himself an extra year. The issue, though, is he's not recruiting. So if anyone's paying attention to that, they're going to know that this every team that he's putting together has like a very low ceiling. I mean, maybe he can go out and get, you know, like four solid guys in the transfer market every year so that his team's at least competitive on the court, but they're not going to, you know, they're not going to excel. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Nick?
Yeah. I don't really understand why he still has a job personally. Like I don't get it. Totally echo your sentiment on him just going to the portal and trying to put a band-aid on it to save his job year after year. But you know, you look at those Lorenzo Romar teams and they were just stacked with Seattle talent year in, year out. And Hopkins just can't get the Seattle guys anymore. I mean, like Tony Roden, Abdul Gaddy, Isaiah Thomas, right? They just, Justin Holiday, I guess Justin Holiday was an LA guy, but you know, Romar was able to get so much talent up there and Hopkins just isn't doing it. I mean, he had Matisse Thybulle, but he was a Romar recruit originally. So like even like, you know, USC went up and got Jerron Brooks and Kevin Porter from Seattle that one year. So I think they can do a lot better for sure. Personally.
What are your thoughts, Zach? I mean, do you think, I mean, to answer your own question, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm with Nick. I think Mike Hopkins should have been ejected a couple of years ago at this point. I mean, Washington used to be a powerhouse in the Pac-12, right? Basketball wise. It wasn't that long ago that they were winning the conference or competing to win the conference with big talent. And they were a fun team to watch like 4 years ago. And then Mike Hopkins has just driven the program into the ground, it feels like. And you know, it's nice that he was able to bring in some players. It's nice that he's able to kind of keep it afloat. But I mean, I don't get it. Like, I feel they could bring in anybody and they'd probably kind of scale upwards. Like, Washington's a destination job, right? You'd think that they'd be able to get a good coach who'd want to be able to do something with that program and bring in the Seattle recruits like Nick was talking about. But I mean, I don't know, maybe he'll be able to turn around this year, but I'm just not super confident.
Yeah.
Where would you put that job in the Pac-12 hierarchy? Right. Like, I think you probably go Arizona, UCLA in some order, 1-2, then probably USC just on proximity to LA. And then I think it's better the job in Oregon. Like it should be. I mean, you have the Seattle base there and a lot of this might depend on if they get into the Big Ten or not, but Like, I think that's no worse than fifth in terms of like Pac-12 hierarchy. And I think you could definitely make the case that it's fourth, just given on the the history of the program.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously they've just, it's hard to know, because historic, before Romar, they didn't really recruit all that well either. So Romar was kind of a singular figure. I mean, for bringing in like NBA caliber talent, he did it like no other coach has ever done at Washington. Clearly it can happen, and it's been demonstrated, but I think you need to have a really strong recruiter up there to really get the stuff done. And the fact that Hopkins is kind of perceived as more of a, you know, kind of hands-off mellow guy, I don't think he's the right fit there for, you know, the kind of coach that they need. Especially, you know, when they have their regional rivalry with Oregon, and Oregon's got the Nike brand behind them. So that's just my, it's hard to evaluate that job. Like, if you were to evaluate the job before Romar, it would not have been like a top four job in the Pac, the old Pac 10, I don't think. Cause you would have had schools like Cal, up there, Stanford. And now it's hard to evaluate. So I don't know. I don't know. If that job is as great, unless you just have a dynamite recruiter like Romar was.
I mean, even if they, like, you could even just go poach Kyle Smith, right? Like, from across, you know, the state. Like, there's no reason that Washington State should be doing better than Washington.
Oh, right? there are any number of coaches that they could go hire right now that would be a major improvement over Hopkins. That's very clear. And we'll get that coach, that program, the level of respectability. Now, speaking of coaches on the hot seat, let's go down to Corvallis. Two seasons ago, the Oregon State Beavers made it to the Elite Eight. It actually kind of put a little bit of a scare into Houston, that threatened that the team might even make to the Final Four. Last season, Oregon State, let's see, they beat Nicholls State, they beat Portland State, and they beat Utah. And that was it. That was all their wins for the entire season. They didn't win any game. They haven't won any games in the calendar year 2022. And here's the crazy part. A lot of the players from last year's team, Jared Lucas, Maurice Kalou, Warith Alatiche, had been, Roman Silva, had been players that were key in the run that the Beavers made to the Elite Eight. They were back last year and played. And those guys are gone. They're not on the team anymore. Jared Haas transferred. Kalou, I think, is done with eligibility. Alatiche decided he doesn't want to play college basketball anymore. No huge shock there. A guy who kind of came on against USC at the end of the season, Deshaun Davis, I mean, just really killed us in one game. He transferred too. So this is a team that won 1-19 in the Pac-12, 3-28 overall, didn't win any games in the calendar year 2022. And if anything, the roster looks far worse heading into this season. So, Zach, what is there to say?
So I broke my notes for this podcast down into like pros and cons for each team, right? And my singular pro for Oregon State is that they could finish 10th next season once UCLA and USC aren't in the conference anymore. It's going to be bad this year. I think this is the worst Power Six team in college basketball, and I think they are by a country mile. Like, they lost their five best players on a team that went 1-19 in conference. Like, what? And the one guy they brought in who could maybe do something, Christian Wright from Georgia, he's injured, I think. And I think it's a pretty serious injury. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I know he's injured. I genuinely don't even know what they're going to do. Like, it is bad. This team is not good. These are all mid-major players for the most part. It's going to be a very brutal season down in Oregon State.
Yeah, mid-major, I think, is actually might be overrated. I think some of these guys are not really Division I players. I will note that Jordan Poole, Jordan Pope from Prolific Prep is joining the team. So, and he had some big games in the in that high school tournament that ESPN runs. But you know, he's not going to single-handedly take a team to victory. Nick, I'll let you weigh in.
Yeah, Jordan Pope actually was a decent add. I presume he'll leave the program after a year once he, you know, goes 0-20 in conference play this year. I think they could go 0 for the season. I guess they play Bushel University, which is not a D1 school, so they should be able to beat them in Corvallis. But even Florida A&M and Portland State seem like potential losses in Corvallis. Portland State especially seems dangerous. They play Duke this year, which is all that's also fun. But yeah, I don't see them beating like Seattle or Green Bay. DU, like Denver University, I think they're breaking in. I don't know if they're breaking a new coach, but they're kind of perennially bad these days. I think they've got Jeff Wolbrin, the former Stanford assistant. But yeah, I don't know what to add to what you guys have said. I can't think of a worse Pac-12 team to start the season in recent memory. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I can't think of – I mean, I've been watching Pac-10, Pac-12 basketball since the late 80s. This is the worst team on paper I've ever seen. And I don't even think it's close. But, you know, and I would say, oh, you never know. But I think we do know. Yeah, it's terrible. All right, let's
quick shout out to Wayne Tinkle. Quick shout out to Wayne Tinkle's agent again.
Yeah.
Did a phenomenal job.
Unbelievable. Okay, let's head down the road to a completely different situation in Eugene. Dana Altman, I think he's tweaked his lineup a little bit. I think we talked a little bit on the last podcast how Altman's program, I don't want to say it's been faltering, but you know, there was that period of time where they just seemed like they were a burgeoning powerhouse program. They were clearly going to be kind of like the top program in the conference. And we're talking about like the 2017 time period or something around then. And since then, I mean, they've had some good seasons, but you don't really get the sense that Oregon is nearly as dominant as they were, especially when they had players like Dylan Brooks and Tyler Dorsey. This version of the Oregon team, I think, can be very solid, very good. I think they can make a Sweet 16, maybe even make an Elite Eight, just because they have enough good players, although they don't have – I'm not sure how many great players they have. So they got Will Richardson to come back to school, which is kind of was a shocker because forever the rumor was he was going to leave and go try pro somewhere. And, you know, he's back. So that's kind of a coup for the program. They got Keyshawn Bartholomew to transfer from Colorado. Bartholomew's not like a great basketball player, but he's kind of just like a really nice guard to have. And I think he's going to be like a key addition because I think he can play point guard and let Richardson kind of play off the ball a little bit and be more of a scorer. They also brought in Jermaine Cuisinard from South Carolina, not as superstar type player, but I think somebody that can do a little bit here and there. Guerrier is back. Nafale Dante is back. The big addition is Khalil Ware, who's like a top 10 overall player recruit for the class of 2022. He's, I think, the most talented player on their team, potential, you know, lottery pick. I'm not sure he will be the way the modern NBA works out. But to me, a lot of what the success we're going to see, whether or not Oregon, you know, how strong they are, can they play with both Ware and Dante on the court? They could never get Dante on the court with Kepnong. It was just like, you know, they couldn't guard the perimeter adequately. That became a big issue. And Guerrier is kind of an undersized four. So if they can get Ware on the court with Dante and be effective and defend, I think they're going to be a really tough team overall, potentially like a top 15 team nationally. If not, if they have to make choices between playing Ware or Dante, I think they're more like a top 30 team. I mean, that's just kind of a very generalized idea on my end. But how do you see this team there?
Yeah, definitely like them. A lot of good players, like you said. Not very many great players unless Kelo Ware becomes that as a freshman. I think that's a little bit of a big ask for him. He seems like a, you know, one and done, but not one of those dominant like Evan Mobley types. I do like the addition of Bartholomew. I think his shooting indicators are good, and I definitely believe in him, you know, as a shooter, catch and shoot guy. A little bit of ball handling there. They don't really have like the true point guard. I know you mentioned like Bartholomew being able to do that, and I think like he can handle, but you know, certainly isn't like what you're looking for in a lead guard, kind of like Boogie Ellis at USC, right? They're similar players. I think Boogie's a little bit better of an athlete, but a little bit in that mold. Cuisinart, I just don't like as a player. I don't think he can shoot or defend. I think that's actually a downgrade from Davion Harmon for them. So don't really love that. Guerrier and Richardson kind of seem maxed out. I think what you saw last year is kind of what you're going to get. So I don't know with them. I think they'll probably make the tournament, but I'm not sold on them as like a top 8 seed yet.
Where are you at, Zach?
I think I'm definitely more bullish than Nick is on Oregon. I think Will Richardson's going to be in for a pretty big year this year. I think he's quietly maybe even a Pac-12 player of the year guy. I really like Will Richardson. I think him being able to play off ball a little bit more is going to really help his game. I do share the point guard concerns. Keyshawn Barthelemy, one of the reasons I think he left Colorado to begin with is because Tad Boyle didn't really see him as a point guard, and KJ Simpson kind of got those minutes at the end of the year. So I personally kind of view Keyshawn Barthelemy as more of a combo guard too. One sneaky good ad, I think, for Oregon is this JUCO transfer, Tyrone Williams. He averaged 27 a game on 43% from three at whatever JUCO he was at last year. I'm not 100% sure on those numbers, but he shot over 40 from three, I think over 50 from the field. I think it was a really nice, quiet ad. Who knows if that'll end up transferring, but Dane Altman does have a good track record with JUCO guys at Oregon. Guerrier is a good player. I'm really bullish on Kelo Ware. I think he's probably the best freshman in the conference this year, maybe. I think it's close with some of the guys on UCLA, but if him and Dante can play on the floor together, because I think it's depending on whether or not Kelo Ware can hit from space and defend fours, but if they can play together and Will Richardson kind of takes a step that I think he can do, I think this team could be pretty good.
Okay, let's move down to the Bay Area. And okay, so last season, Cal basketball was somewhat competitive for, let's say, the first half of the season. They ended up 12-20 overall, 5-15 in the conference. Andre Kelly, their best player, got hurt, and they really didn't win too ton of games after that, and that really kind of affected them. Their other best player was their three best players were Andre Kelly, Jordan Shepherd, and Grant Antisevic. They're all gone. So whenever you finish 10th in the conference and then your three best players leave, not a great sign for the next season. They did bring in one transfer, which Devin Askew. I think he's 20 years old. This is already his third college. I know he wanted to go to SC. Didn't want to take him. I don't really see the newcomers here to justify kind of a some sort of positive view of this team. Joel Brown had some moments. Jalen Celestine had some moments. Kwani had some moments. If they're on their own where they've got to lead a team, it's hard to see for me where that's going to be. But I will say this, at least they're not Oregon State. I don't know, Zach, I'll throw it to you. What are your thoughts on Cal's prospects for the season?
Yeah, my they're better than Oregon State is definitely the one positive going in the year. So they should knock at least one. I don't know if they play Oregon State once or twice this year, but they should at least knock a win there. Devin Askew wasn't very good, I don't think. He was not good at Kentucky, and he was not very good at Texas either. There's a reason he had to leave twice. And like you said, yeah, Joel Brown, Kwani, I think they're both good players, but not starting players on high major teams. And then, I just don't even know who else. They didn't really bring in anybody. Devin Askew's the only transfer. The freshman, I don't really know a ton about. It's going to be, I think Cal's kind of looking at a 11th place finish in the Pac-12 pretty comfortably this season is my thoughts.
What are your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I second that. I think they're the 11th best team here. Devin Askew, he'll get his shots at least, right? So, I'm expecting like 35-36% from the field for him. Just there aren't any other threats either. So I guess like their personnel is better than Oregon State. And, I know that Torvik has them close to Utah. I think Utah is definitely better than these guys, though.
Yeah, well, I think very clearly better, right?
Well, we're about to talk about that because Utah finished 11th last year at 4-4 at 4-16. They didn't have quite the, you know, they didn't lose their top three players the way Cal had. They have Brandon Carlson back. He's probably their best player. Mohorchik, who kind of like filled in for Carlson some last year, he's gone. Bothgotch, who would kill SC and do not do much in other games, he's finally, I think, mercifully done with college basketball. Is that right?
Yes.
So, you know, if you go down the list of like who the players that they gave minutes to last season, Rolly Worcester, he's back. He actually may not be the starter because they brought in Mike Sanders as a transfer from Cincinnati. So that potentially could be an upgrade. Gabe Madsen had that huge game against SC. I don't know if he's going to be able to replicate anything close to that this upcoming season. David Jenkins is gone. Jackson Brenchley is he's back, but I think he'll probably come off the bench because Lazar Stefanik will probably start. Then they have Marco Anthony, who was originally at Utah State. He's still around, and they have Carlson. Riley Batten is gone. The newcomers on this team, I think like the transfer they brought in from Wisconsin, I think was like barely played any minutes. I don't know. His last name was Carlson. I don't know if he's related to Brandon Carlson or not. And then they brought in a transfer from BYU who's like averaged 6.5 points and 2.5 rebounds. It's just like odd. It's like odd why you're taking transfers like that. But you know, I think Utah will be better than Cal, but I'm not sure they're going to be better than they were last season. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think Brandon Carlson's like a sneaky, like really good player. They're a big guy. So like, wouldn't be surprised if he went out and averaged like 18 and 9 or something like that. But Marco Anthony, like he started at Virginia. Like you said, he went to Utah State, followed Craig Smith over to Utah after that. He's okay. Same with Rolly Worcester, kind of just okay. I do think like these guys are better than Cal, though, just personnel wise. I think they just have better players. And they do have that Gabe Madsen guy who had a bunch of threes against SC in the first half of the game there. So he's, you know, decent. So there's enough there. I think like you're going to have to take the game in Salt Lake City pretty seriously, just with their crowd too and all that. But I don't see them cracking the top like 8 of the conference. I think they're probably like 9th or 10th.
What are your thoughts, Zach?
Yeah. I think it's a step in the right direction for the program after last season. They kept some of the important dudes who played a lot of minutes last year, like Rolly Worcester, Marco Anthony, Brennan Carlson. And Brennan Carlson is better than anybody Cal or Oregon State has. So I think they're comfortably a better team than either of those two teams are. Mike Sanders is a nice addition. I know he didn't play like a ton at Cincinnati, but I think he's a pretty good player and should start a point guard, I think, over Rolly Worcester. Outside of that, I think it's just working on rebuilding, right? That's just kind of the angle here for Utah. And I think at least in a silver lining sense, this is a step in the right direction to getting the program being competitive again after, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing we don't really know is, you know, Krzyzewiak used to always bring in these guys that, you know, were totally unheralded, and then, you know, they show up on the court and they're really good. You know, we don't know if that's actually going to happen here under Craig Smith. So, like, they brought in this guy from Mexico. I think his name is Exacte. I have no idea if he might be tremendous. I have no idea. I've never seen him play. They bring in this kid from Utah called Kiba Kieta. I mean, I don't like, these are players I've just never seen. And maybe, you know, maybe these will be like the Krzyzewiak players that just are like way better than they appear on paper, but that's not the case. You know, and maybe it's a step up. I do wonder, like, I'm not seeing necessarily that Craig Smith has the ability to like recruit the way that they need to recruit in Utah. So I think that's an open question in my mind, at least. Okay, so I guess let's move over to Boulder. So, you know, I can't say that I think things are necessarily going in the right direction for Tad Boyle. So Colorado did finish decently last year, 12-8. the conference. They were alone in fourth place. Jabari Walker had just a crazy great year in conference. He didn't shoot as well from three as you know some thought he might going into the season, but he rebounded like crazy. We talked about him on the last podcast. He decided he's you know in the NBA now. Evan Batty is gone. Bartholomew transferred. So, you know, they had like this interesting mix of players that if those guys would have come back, I would have said, oh, these guys can even compete for the, you know, potentially to win the conference, but they all left, right? So you have KJ Simpson back, who I think was on a nice trajectory going upwards, but now that he doesn't really have the talent around him that he was going to have, I think this might be a little bit of a dicey year for him. Tristan Da Silva had a tremendous shooting percentage last year, very efficient. He's back. Nick Clifford's back. Julian Hammond's back. Oh, Lawson Levering. you know, and then as far as newcomers, they brought in two transfers. A guy named Gabidian from Yale, who I'm pretty sure did not score very highly at Yale. And then this kid, Ethan Wright, who transferred from Princeton, who had, I think, some better numbers. So I don't know. I don't know if they did enough in as far as like personnel wise to get them to the place where they need to be to kind of be competing for an NCAA tournament bid this upcoming season. You know, they brought in RJ Smith from Damien. He was high school teammates with Malik Thomas. You know, so if you watch Malik Thomas's high school games, he looked interesting at times. I don't know. What are your thoughts here, Zach?
I'll preface my statements with I'm from Boulder, so I'm a pretty big CU basketball guy. So I'm going to be a little bit of a homer here, but it's definitely going to be a down year compared to last year. You lose Jabari Walker, you lose Evan Batty, your two best players. It's going to take a little bit of rebuilding for sure. I will say they have a lot of swings of the bat here in terms of just guys that you can throw out there and see how good they are. And KJ Simpson, Tristan Silver, both really good players. I think Tristan Silver is going to be in for a good year. Super efficient. I think he was 16th in offensive rating, 17th in offensive rating in the Pac-12 last year, something like that. Quincy Allen's a guy to watch. He was injured all of last year, so he didn't play. He's going to be a freshman this year now. He was very, very good in high school. He was a 40% three-point shooter, 6'7 wing. I think he's going to slot in as a starter right away and be kind of a big guy for them. It'll be interesting. I think this team has a very wide range of outcomes just because they have a lot of dudes who, like, I just don't know. A couple of some freshmen, Joe Hobert from North Dakota, is another guy whose film looks pretty good, but what kind of talent level is he playing against up there? We know what that kind of looked like with Lawson Levering last year. Javon Ruffin's another guy I didn't play last year. Maybe he's good. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of range here, but it's also a young team, so it's not a huge priority for, I think, CU to be awesome. I'm not sure they're a tournament team, though. And before I pass it off to Nick, I do have some Lawson Levering stats for you guys that I just think kind of exemplify how much a disaster that was last year.
We kind of hinted at it on the last podcast. So, yeah, Zach, just give you the floor. Just go for it.
All right. So among players in the Pac-12 last season with 100-plus minutes, Lawson Levering was dead last in BPM with -5.4. He was second to last in PER, only behind Sam Skine from Stanford. He had an O rating of 67. 67! he played 170 minutes, I think. That's unbelievable. A true shooting percentage of 33. Like, that's just remarkable stuff. And he might be their starting center, so I hope he got better over the offseason. I know that he got shut down with an injury. I suspect that injury may have been just time to get him off the floor and get, you know, take him out of the spotlight a bit. But man, he had a rough season last year.
It turns out Wyoming high school basketball isn't quite the Pac-12. So
I know, who would have thought?
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of agree with you on Colorado. I think like Tad Boyle's a really good coach, so he'll be able to get them to respectability in the conference. And I think they probably have a winning record, but sixth, seventh in the league, like, I think Washington State just has better personnel than them, you know, here. Like, I don't know. They're clearly worse than like Oregon, SC, Arizona, UCLA, Stanford. Yeah. So maybe seventh, eighth, but you know, again, like they're going to be a really tough out in Boulder just with the altitude and, you know, Tad Boyle.
So before we bounce down to the desert schools, let's return to the Bay. Cause I guess I was a little quick in moving out of the Bay because I think it's, we should really talk about Stanford. I think Bart Torvik has them like number preseason, like number 34 overall. A big decision was made last season when Harrison Ingram decided to come back to school. You know, around the, I mean, this is something Nick and I always used to joke about that, you know, they would play like they go 11 deep at personnel. Sometimes it didn't really make sense a lot what they were doing, but they, you know, BSC no problem twice. So Jared Haas bought himself more time. He still hasn't made the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure if he'll ever make the NCAA tournament, but this is like his best chance, at least on paper. He's got Spencer Jones back, who really came on at the end of last season. Jane Dallaire left the program, but I think they were pretty happy to see him gone because he had really disappointed them as the season wore on last year. Otherwise, they have pretty much all their players back, and they add like Jalen Thompson from a, you know, Southern Cal kid that SC took a hard look at. You know, I kind of like this team as a potential NCAA team, but I don't know, you know, Jared Haas is a coach. I don't know if they can get it done, but on paper, they look pretty good to me. Nick, what are your thoughts here with Stanford?
Yeah, they also had Michael Jones from Davidson, who averaged 12 a game there, shot 42% from deep. So another just piece there. I don't think they have like any good guards. Like I don't think Michael O'Connell's good. I don't think Issa Silva's good. So, you know, Spencer Jones, he's kind of been the same guy since his freshman year. Just kind of guy who run off screens and can hit threes and maybe give you some defensive versatility between the three and the four. Ingram really needs to develop into like a conference player of the year guy. And I just don't think he's athletic enough to do it or a good enough shooter for that matter. So you combine that with Jared Haas, and I'm going to be lower on this team, I think, than the consensus. I you know, Torvik has him at 38. I think they're more in the 50 to 60 range, and I bet they're an NIT team, but we'll see. I could be off base here.
What are your thoughts, Zach?
Yeah, I think NIT probably feels right. I like kind of the core of the roster quite a bit. Harrison Ingram showed some real flashes last year, and I think he's probably going to take a step up this season. Spencer Jones is a good player. Michael Jones from Davidson, nice add. I think Issa Silva could maybe take a step up from last season. I know he wasn't particularly productive last year, but there's a chance he's better. But I think once you kind of get outside that core group of dudes, there's just a very big drop off in talent, which I think is going to be a problem for them. Guys like Brandon Angel, James Keefe, Maxime Renaud, like those guys are not as good as the guys are going to be playing significant minutes for Stanford this year. And if they have to, and like you said, Stanford likes to run it 11 deep and give these guys tons of minutes for some reason, I think that's a problem for them right off the bat. That's going to limit them a little bit more than I think what they could. So the depth is a problem for me. Jared Haas just hasn't proven he can done it yet in the Pac-12. So I think that's also a problem. Yeah, I think NIT probably 7th, 8th-ish in the Pac-12 this year is kind of where I have them slated. We'll see, though. Maybe Harrison Ingram comes out and is just awesome and really shows some major improvement and drags them into kind of the 5 area. I think that is a possibility for Stanford, but I would probably lean the other way there.
Just one note on Spencer Jones. The 4 games he played in March this past season, he's averaged 23 points a game in those 4 games. Of course, Stanford went 1-3 in those games. So he wasn't able to get them to wins. Okay, let's head down to the desert. I think we'll go right down the street for me to start, Tempe. Arizona State, They were, I know we mentioned them in the last podcast. There was some video up from their practice. I have to say, I finally took a look at it. And yeah, I was not super impressed. And maybe it was just like the angle that we're looking at stuff from. But just to get an overview on what they're looking like personnel wise, Marcus Bagley is back playing. You know, I'm going to assume for the purposes of this podcast that he's like actually going to play for them this season. Although I think that's a little, I mean, I think he'll start the season. I have very serious questions of like whether he'll get injured at some point and just like stop playing. From last season's team, they lose Marion Jackson. They lose Kamani Lawrence. They lose Jay Heath, who is their best shooter. And they lose Jalen Graham, who's really kind of their best player by far in the last like month and a half of the season. That was a big loss. He went to Arkansas. So they had a lot of rebuilding to do. You know, getting Bagley back is key to that. They bring in Frankie Collins from Michigan. That's an interesting pickup. He was a very highly recruited point guard who spent 1 year in Michigan and just didn't do a lot. They still have DJ Horn. They still have Luther Muhammad, Alonzo Gaffney. So they have all these transfers that they, you know, the guys that previously transferred into the school. They have Boyakji at center potentially, presumably at center. And then they have, you know, these Cambridge brothers coming in, one from Auburn, and then Desmond Cambridge, who's transferring from Nevada after, you know, starting his career at Brown. So, yeah. You know, they're a team. It's a little bit similar to what Hopkins is doing in Washington. They did bring in one high school recruit who looks pretty good, which is Austin Nieves as a point guard. I guess he and Frankie Collins were battle out for who's going to be the starting point guard, but I think Collins is going to be the starting point guard. Anyway, I just kind of feel like, you know, this is a team that can be respectable on paper, but the way that Hurley is constructing these teams, it's like very similar to Hopkins, very low ceiling. It's unclear what the long-term direction here with the program is. I don't know, maybe Frankie Collins sticks around for three seasons and, takes over the program as the next like really strong Hurley guard, but I don't know. You know, but that all being said, on paper, there's enough there on paper that can convince you, hey, this team could be competitive, finish in the top half of the conference, maybe even, you know, compete to be a bubble team in the NCAA tournament. Zach, what are your thoughts here?
I think that, like you said, on paper, I like some of the pieces. Marcus Bagley being healthy, I think, would make a big difference. But I just do not trust Bobby Hurley to run a good college basketball offense. They finished dead last in offensive rating in the Pac-12 last season, and I just don't see any pieces here that are going to fix that in a significant way. They were 294th in the country in effective field goal percentage. Like, is Frankie Collins and Desmond Cambridge going to be enough to turn the tide? I doubt it. I'm not sure either of those players are better than Jay Heath or Marion Jackson or whoever. I think Kamani Lawrence is going to be a big loss. I'm skeptical. I think I'm going to be pretty low on this Arizona State team when it's all said and done, especially just because I don't think that Bobby Hurley can coach a conducive offense to winning basketball.
What do you think, thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, we'd probably put them in the 8 to 9 range. Hurley's kind of doing the thing where he's grabbing former top recruits out of the portal who didn't perform at their prior stops. And usually that's not a really healthy approach to your program. So I'm skeptical that they're going to be great. I mean, there's enough athleticism there to think that they're going to be pretty decent defensively again. But the Grant thing is just, that's just really tough, right? Like, they lose an all Pac-12 player who is their best player, who decides to go be like an eighth man on Arkansas. So that's just kind of says a lot about their program. And I do think Hurley's doing like a decent job accumulating talent though, just because, you look at what Herb Sendek got before Bobby Hurley and outside of Harden, like he wasn't really getting the, at least the names that Hurley got. So I'm not sure ASU could do better. But they, it kind of is what it is with them, right? They're just going to be like an eighth or ninth, you know, level team in the Pac-12?
I do. I do think they're, if you have the right athletic director or the right program, I do think that they could be better. In fact, you saw that with Hurley for a couple of years. You know, you just need a better coach. I think a better coach overall, better coach than Hurley is. Yeah, Sendek is, you know, Sendek's an interesting coach. I mean, I think he's a solid, solid college basketball coach, but he's not, you know, he's about the most boring coach you can imagine. He runs a boring program. So it's hard to like really, you know, convince kids to go there. You know, where the way, you know, the Phoenix area is situated nowadays, you know, you have these prep school basketball mills popping up here, like Compass Prep. And so I think you could actually have a pretty competitive a team if they wanted to get things together. You know, one of the problems obviously is Arizona, University of Arizona is the biggest basketball school here. So they're always going to kind of be second fiddle, but I think they could be more competitive if they just did things a little better. I'm just looking right really quick at Frankie Collins last year. O rating in conference play in the Big Ten, 75.2. So, you know, I don't know how much better it's going to be in the Pac-12. That being said, I'm a little higher on these guys than you guys are. Okay, let's go down to the
Chase, yeah. One quick question about ASU. So I agree with you that they're going to be second fiddle in Arizona, but even looking at like what Hurley's done, right? I guess he inherited Trey Holder. He went and got Shannon Evans from Buffalo as a transfer. And then he kind of did the gimmicky thing to get Josh Christopher by taking the, you know, the brother for a year, right? And that didn't really pan out, but do you think it's enough of a draw they can get consistent high school talent out of LA and out recruit like USC, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon?
Because no, I don't. I don't think their path. I don't think their path is. I don't. Yeah, I don't think the path is to try to recruit local Los Angeles high school recruits. I think the path is to try to recruit guys that like leave home and play prep school, not necessarily in Arizona, but maybe in LA. Or maybe up in the Bay, you know, up in Napa, or just across the country. You know, they got Lou Dort. You know, he's able to, you know, I don't like the deal with Remy Martin. Obviously, that was a unique situation because he had kind of gotten himself a little bit of trouble in high school, so people didn't were kind of hesitant to recruit him. But, you know, I mean, they got Kamani Lawrence. He was in a prep school in New England. So he's been able to get players. The problem is now he's not really getting those guys any longer. It doesn't look like. And instead he's getting like Mickey Mitchell, you know, he's getting a lot of those kind of guys now. And it hurt, you know, like a guy like Romello White, you know, transferring before like his senior year where he was going to be like a really prominent player. Then Jalen Graham goes and does the same thing. I think there's like a little bit of there's like some tarnish on the program because he really, he struggled not this past season, but the year before that when he had Remy and he had Josh Christopher and he had Bagley, and that was supposed to be like a really big team and he wasn't able to, you know, pull it together. You know, so my, you know, we're, you know, he ended up, you know, he had Tishon Cherry. I mean, like he's been able to get like name players. But I just think he's kind of like, hasn't been able to like get everything to gel. And I think there are players he can get at that program, you know, like you look like a Dort or a Kamani Lawrence, you know, so I don't necessarily think you're going to build like a consistent top 10 team, but I think you could have a consistent like top 30 team. If you had the right coach in there, and I don't think Hurley is the right guy.
Yeah. I mean, they have to pay that Herm Edwards buyout unless they can get out of that for cause. So, I mean, Ray Anderson, like, I don't think we've mentioned Ray Anderson enough in the like worst ADs in the Pac-12 conversation, but I think he's got to be in the mix.
Yeah, for absolutely, for sure. Especially considering like what's, you know, what they've done with or not done with NIL. I don't know if you guys saw, but the Republican candidate for governor here in Arizona, Carrie Lake, just came out very publicly saying she's going to, you know, pull out all the stops to get Urban Meyer to be the new football coach at Arizona State. So I don't know if that's a political gimmick, but I thought that was kind of funny.
Hilarious.
okay. Let's go down the I-10 to Arizona, to Tucson. where there is a guy who can coach, in my opinion, Tommy Lloyd. So look, this is a team, you know, they were really kind of shocked college basketball, right? I mean, they, I don't think they were in any top 25 preseason, kind of, picks for all the gurus. You know, Sean Miller had gotten fired, and Lloyd gets in there and with the pieces that were left and bringing in a couple pieces here and there was able to deliver like a top five team nationally, team that completely dominated the Pac-12 kind of like really powerfully. The big names, some of the big names there from last season aren't gone now. So you're not going to have Ben Matherin. You're not going to have Coloco. You know, you don't have Dalen Terry, who's now in the NBA also. But Azulis Tabellis is back. Umar Balo, who showed a lot, is back. Pelly Larson is back. And then they've added some really interesting pieces too. So I'll talk about them after you guys do. They've added Courtney Ramey from Texas, but you know, really the European vibe is kind of interesting here. They bring in this Henri Vissar, who we've talked about. I'm sure I'm butchering his name, who's from Estonia. They brought in a guy named Philip Broke Vikanen. Hard to pronounce, but he looked pretty good in their scrimmage, which was on television. Kirk Reese is back. You know, obviously we're not huge fans of his. And then they have the transfer from Campbell and Cedric Henderson. So, Zach, I will give you first crack at this team. What are your thoughts about Arizona?
I think this is my favorite team in the Pac-12 this year. I think it's tied between them and UCLA, but I really like this team. I like that Tabellis is back. I like that. And I like some of these guys who I think are going to be able to step up and fill in for the guys who left. I think Pelle Larson is a really good player. He showed some flashes of that last year. Umar Balo, I think, is going to really be able to fill in and kind of do what Christian Coloco was able to do last year with more minutes. Courtney Ramey had an interesting season at Texas last year, but he shot 42%, I think it was, from three the year before that. He's a great 3-and-D wing to have on a roster like this. And that was a really quietly very good pickup. Kirk Crissa, I mean, I think Kirk Crissa is probably a little bit better than you guys do. If he's shooting well and running pick and roll well, I think he's a good enough point guard to do what they need to do. I think quietly, I think Adama Ball is another guy who showed some flashes last year in limited minutes, who I like a lot, who's going to get more of a run out this year. I'm just bullish on the team. I think Tommy Lloyd did an awesome job with them last year, and I'm just excited to kind of see where he takes it with this new group of dudes.
What are your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, like them, don't love them. I just think there are a lot of personnel losses to replace there, starting with, you know, the big three, Matherin, Terry, and Coloco. Coloco was just an unreal player last year, especially defensively, and he was able to anchor that D, and I think they'll take a step back defensively without him. They do seem to be pretty good offensively. I'm a big fan of Henri Vissar. I think he could eclipse what Tubelis did as a freshman. For those guys, wouldn't be surprised at all if he was like a top 10 freshman in college basketball. I don't think Kirk Risa is good. Don't trust him as a shooter. I think he, you know, he flops every play. And Chase, I know you mentioned on a prior pod, like the new flop rules, it's going to impact him more than any other player in the sport. I'm not a big Kylan Boswell guy either. I know he's hurt, but I don't think he's that athletic. And I'm not really seeing him as a year one impact guy for them. Justin Kyer quietly had a really good year for them too. I think that's a real loss. So Ramey, I think, you know, people in theory, I see him as like Justin Kyer, but a little bit better. I'm not sure that's the case. But the case for it is Chris Beard is just an offensively challenged coach, and Lloyd, you know, will be able to unlock some of that and some of what made Courtney Ramey a top recruit. But I just don't think they're good enough defensively to, like, you know, for me to pick them over UCLA, I guess.
So, by the way, I'm more with Zach, and I think, you know, we'll make our picks on who we think is going to win the conference. But I do think there's concerns because I think Hire was underrated. He stepped in a point guard crease, got dinged up toward the end of last year. You know, you look at like Kreese's numbers, like when he came back from injury, he was 2 for 17 from the field, all threes. I think after he only hit, it's like some really crazy numbers in the entire like calendar year of 2022, he only hit like 5 2-point field goals the entire time. So maybe he can get away with that again. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, but I think that's maybe he's focusing too much on Kreese. The problem is I'm not in watching that scrimmage they played. I was not super impressed with Ramey or with the Campbell transfer, Henderson. That being said, Visar looked great. That Philip guy from Serbia looked great. You know, Boswell is hard to know because he's got a foot injury right now. And he's obviously, he's reclassed. So he's going to be young getting there. That being said, you know, gosh, anytime, if you could have a lineup where you've got Tabellis and Ballo and Visar, and then you have like Pelly Larson, I mean, that's tough. And then you don't need all these guys to hit. Like you don't need Kreese and Ramey and Henderson and Boswell or Adama Bowell all to hit. If like just one or two of those guys hits, then you know you really have something going. But that backcourt is a question mark, and that's only if they had some really dynamite point guard, I think they'd have a case for preseason number one. As crazy as that sounds, but they're kind of missing stuff there to fill in the pieces. Let's talk about, you know, the other potential conference favorite, which is UCLA. So we talked about them a little bit on the last podcast, but though they have a lot of players back from last year, obviously Hawkeyes is back, Tyre Campbell's back, Jalen Clark, who kind of had some really good games against lesser competition toward the second half of last season, he's back. They bring in Amari Bailey, who's a top five-star recruit. Adem Bona, who's one of the top big recruits. Those are probably going to be your starters. David Singleton, who was really one of the best like bench players, most efficient best players in college basketball the last year or two. And, you know, he just can't get on the court for very many minutes. Dylan Andrews is coming in from Compass Prep. He's an interesting recruit. Will McClendon from, I think was from Nevada, right? He was hurt last year. He's finally back playing. And then you have Mac Etienne, who missed all of last season and then ran into some legal troubles in Tucson. He's back. And then they have this Euro. The one Euro who did make it into school was Abramo Conca from Italy, who looks interesting, you know, potential. I don't know if he's going to play a lot this season, but looks like a potential, player down the road for them. So I'll throw it to you first, Nick. Where are you at with UCLA for this season?
Pretty high on them. I think Tyre Campbell is the second best point guard in the country, I think, behind Marcus Sasser. Absolute, super skilled, really good passer, takes care of the ball. I mean, he's just he doesn't turn the ball over, and that's so crucial in a lead guard. So him coming back is huge for UCLA. Juzang, like, I wouldn't say he's it's good that he's gone, but it kind of clears out, you know, some more minutes for Jalen Clark and Jaime Hawkeyes and Amari Bailey. And even David Singleton, who's one of the best shooters in the conference, right? You add Adem Bona, gives him a lot of length and rim protection. I think the question I think with him is, will he be as impactful defensively as Miles Johnson was? Johnson was great as a rim protector and as an offensive rebounder. So I like him a lot. I think Jaime Hawkeyes, he had a poor shooting year with shot under 28% from three, but I think he's certainly capable of upping that into the mid 30s. I don't think it's a mechanically broken jump shot by any means. Then like losing Cody Riley, I think is kind of an addition by subtraction there. Like him a lot. They finished 12th in KenPom offense and 16th in KenPom D. think they have a very good chance to be, you know, top 15 in both KenPom offense and KenPom defense. And then when you compare that to Arizona, right? Arizona finished the year 21st in KenPom D. I don't really think they finished top 30 to 35 in KenPom D. So that just puts a lot of pressure on their offense to be like a top five offense, I think, if they want to eclipse UCLA.
Zach, where are you at with UCLA?
Yeah, I mean, UCLA's got a good team this year. I think, for me at least, it's kind of splitting hairs between them and Arizona for who I think is going to be best in the conference. Tiger Hample and Jaime Jaquez are easily, I think, the best duo in the conference this year. Jaime Jaquez was sixth in offensive rating, KenPom offensive rating, and Tiger Hample was 17th. 70 true shooting percentage in conference. Jaime Jaquez was 13th. Tiger Hample's 23rd. Tiger Hample was 9th in the conference assist rate. Like, these are just really, really good players who are going to carry this team a lot, even if none of the freshmen hit. And that's kind of my one concern, I think, is that they're going to be relying on some freshmen to play big minutes for them. I think Adeem Bona is a very good player, but he is a freshman. So I'm worried about the workload he's probably going to get at center, because I think Matt Etienne is not very good, and I would not want him to be playing. But yeah, I mean, defensively, you got Jalen Clark, David Singleton, Hawkes, all these guys defend. I think this is probably going to be just a defensive lockdown team with great offensive players. I've been critical of Mari Bailey in the past as a prospect, but I think he took some real steps forward at Sierra Canyon this year. So I'm a little less nervous about him coming in and playing big minutes for UCLA, which I think he's going to have to do. But yeah, I mean, this is just going to be a really good team. I'm excited to see between them and Arizona. I think those are going to be just awesome games next year. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I know I've said this in past podcasts. I'll just repeat it. I think the one decision that may have really cost them down the line was the Jules Bernard not coming back. I could have seen him being a really key player. I've talked about this a lot, but that Mick Cronin offense is really, you know, it's a shot maker's offense. He really gets his players into kind of like isolation matchups that tend to be favorable for them, and then tries to make them make plays. When Singleton was struggling, when Bernard was struggling, UCLA struggled. When he got his act together toward the end of the season, UCLA was really, really tough. So that's the one question mark I have with Bailey. I don't know if he's going to be able to kind of get that, you know. I know he can get to the basket and score at the rim. I mean, it's just about as well as any kind of, you know, guard you're going to find for coming out of high school. But I do question whether or not he's going to, you know, he's going to have that mid-range game. Is he going to be able to hit tough shots outside of the key? That's my question on Bailey. But that all being said, I think they'll be really good. And, let's talk about USC, and then we'll talk about where we think all these teams are going to finish in the conference. Okay. So, you know, SC, we talk about all the time on this podcast, obviously. Big decision made at the end of last season was that Isaiah Mobley moved on to the NBA. That left a hole on the team. There were no transfers came to fill in that hole. And that was kind of like that hurt. There's a hole at point guard, a hole kind of a power forward that wasn't really kind of nicely filled. They're going to try to, I think, have, you know, Kobe Johnson, Boogie Ellis play those minutes at point guard. I don't know. Maybe they're going to try to have Malik Thomas take some of those minutes. I don't know. It's not clear to me. There's ample talent that could play the four. I don't know if they're ready to play in a kind of like a really elite Pac-12 level in Harrison Hornery and Kajani Wright, but they're there. They're on the team. It would be nice though if you just, you know, they've gotten a really solid transfer there that could have taken those minutes. I think we may see Drew Peterson or, you know, Reese Dixon Waters playing some minutes at the four, depending on how the team kind of like structures or how they want to line up. And then there's the Uwachukwu issue where he was going to be the top recruit coming in, and he obviously is a huge question mark if he'll play at all this season. SC's really going to now be relying much more on Joshua Morgan to make big steps over last season. And the key for SC will be, you know, that kind of core of Drew Peterson, Boogie Ellis, Reese Waters, and maybe Trey White, if you can get things together. Obviously, people have been positive about Isaiah Sellers, but, you know, we'll have to see. So it's a transition year for SC. I guess, Zach, I'll throw it to you first. Where are you at with SC this upcoming season?
USC is kind of in a weird spot in the Pac-12. I think they're pretty clearly worse than Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona, but I think they're pretty clearly better than everybody else. So that's just sort of my initial takeaway. They Drew Peterson's great player, Reese Dixon-Waters, awesome player. Boogie Ellis, good to have back. I think that those guys defensively gives me a little bit of concern. Having all those dudes on the court at the same time, I get a little bit of nervous. Kobe Johnson, I think, will have to play big minutes defensively for them this year. He had a really shockingly good defensive rating last year, 92.6, which was pretty easily the best on the team of anybody who played 200 minutes. I know those stats can be very noisy, but I did think that was really interesting. But yeah, like you said, transition year. If Josh Morgan has to play a lot of minutes at center, I do think that could be bad for tournament hopes and tournament seeding. He was not particularly good last year. I think you guys would agree with that. But yeah, I think in terms of transition wise, mostly besides Isaiah Mobley, I think not a ton of huge losses. And all these freshmen are guys who I think could play multiple years at USC and really build into the program, which would be very good over the long run. So I think overall it's going to be a positive year for USC.
So Nick, I know we'll be talking about them all season, but how would you just convey your thoughts right now?
Yeah, we sure will. I think it's a tournament team still. I think they're better at guard with Anderson moving on and getting Ellis back and Dixon Waters another year into the program. Same with Kobe Johnson. Maybe Ozias Sellers plays some spot minutes for you. I do think he's like just a really good shooter. You look at some of his movement shooting on tape from SoCal Academy, and I think they really stole one there. Kobe Johnson, again, like I'm pretty high on him. I think the shot isn't broken, and he's just a very impactful defensive player with a lot of length and really good anticipation. So Dixon Waters is a good defender. He does get like blown by a little bit. I was watching some tape on that, but he's solid and a pretty good positional rebounder too. So they lose Max Agbonpolo. He just didn't quite develop into the shooter I think that they wanted. And then you look at the bigs, right? Like Chavez Goodwin kind of wore down in conference play, and Isaiah Mobley wasn't quite the same post injury. I do definitely think they'll take a step back with the, in terms of their bigs. I think the rotation with, even though Chavez had his struggles, Isaiah Mobley was just really good, was a guy they could just dump it down and get a decent shot, have him either create for himself or for others. So, I do kind of believe in them as a shooting team. Like I think they're going to shoot upper 30s from three, and they might just shoot a ton of threes this year. Given the lack of interior play, and if they make enough, like maybe they turn into a somewhat dangerous offensive team, compared to prior years. So I'm intrigued. I think I'd probably agree with Zach. I think I'd have him fourth right now though. Chase, throw it to you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into how we think the conference is going to, finish here. I think I think we all agree that Oregon State's going to finish last and that Cal is going to finish 11th. Do we have agreement on that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So let's jump up to the top of the conference. Now, I think we have different opinions here. So we'll go first to you, Zach, then to you, Nick. Who do you have winning the conference?
I have Arizona winning the conference. I think it's close between them and UCLA. I may even change my opinion before the season starts, as I tend to do. But I just really like what Arizona's bringing to the table, and I like that the guys that they're asking to step up this year to replace Benedict Mathurin and all the guys who left are guys who were kind of already on the roster. And like you guys were both talking about, the incoming class of new players, the foreign guys who are coming in look pretty exciting. And then I'm way more bullish on Courtney Rainey than you two are. And I think that was really nice pickup. And that's kind of why I have them edging out UCLA.
Okay. But you have UCLA number two.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And what about yourself, Nick?
Yep. I got the Bruins winning the conference. One concern I do have about them is Jalen Clark was really bad against good teams last year and feasted on bad teams. So that's kind of given the way he plays is like an undersized hustle four. That's something I would watch out for, is I'm just not quite sure his game is totally scalable against elite defenses. But I do think there's enough there to compensate for that. So I'll take the Bruins.
Okay, so not to jump ahead with you, Nick, but do you have Arizona finishing second or some other team finishing second?
Arizona number two. Yeah.
Okay, so I think we all three of us have UCLA and Arizona one or two, just depending on what order. I'm with Zach. I'm going to go with Arizona one. I know that's different than what most of the kind of the preseason picks are looking at from, you know, the different experts and whatnot. I know that Torvik has it relatively close, right? I think Torvik has UCLA number nine, Arizona number 13. But 24/7 did like a top 25 preseason, and Arizona wasn't even the top 25. I think Arizona is going to finish first. And the reason why I do is Tommy Lloyd. I think he's a better coach than Mick Cronin. Even though I don't think Cronin's a bad coach, I just think Lloyd's a better coach. Okay, so third place. Zach, I take it you have Oregon finishing third.
Yeah. I like Dana Altman. I like a lot of the pieces they have. I think they're pretty comfortably third for me, because I don't think they're going to be sniffing top two, and I don't think that they're going to fall behind USC at four. So I feel pretty comfortable, for me at least, having Oregon right there in that three slot as a pretty comfortable tournament team, maybe like a 5-4 seed.
Where are you at with this, Nick? Are you at Oregon three or some other team?
I have Oregon three. I do think it's closer between them and SC, not because I'm, you know, a lot higher on SC than Zach, but I think I'm a little bit lower on Oregon, just since they, you know, they didn't make a tournament last year and have a lot of the same guys who I think have plateaued. So I'm a little lower on the Ducks, but also have them three.
Okay, so Torvik has Oregon third in the conference at number 30. I also have Oregon, so we all agree. So we all have the same top three, we just differ on. So we all three have the same top three in the bottom two. We just differ on who's going to be first between UCLA and Arizona. Now I think we're going to get into some differences of opinion. It sounded like, Zach, you think you have SC fourth here, and Nick, you do too. Is that right for both you guys?
Yep.
Okay, I think Stanford's going to finish fourth. Of course.
Whoa.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. So wow.
I'm agreeing here with Torvik, actually. So I just have a feeling, but you know, I could be wrong. I have USC finishing fifth. Nick, who do you have at fifth? Obviously it doesn't have to be Stanford. It could be anybody, right?
Yeah, I've got Washington State at five.
Okay. What about yourself, Zach?
I have Colorado at five, trusted Tad Boyle.
All right, so we have quite the differences of opinion. So this is where we start to get into, you know, the separation. So my number six, I think, is going to be Washington State. Were you at number six, Zach?
I have Washington State at six as well. I'm just a little bit concerned about them offensively. Just a quick note on Justin Powell. I'm just concerned because they're going to need him to do some offensive stuff this year. And he was just not very good against good teams last year or at Auburn when he was playing well. And I think that has me a little bit more dicey on Washington State than you two, but fifth and sixth, you're kind of splitting hairs there.
Okay. And what about, where are you at, Nick?
I will go with Colorado at six.
Okay. All right. Seventh in the conference. I think I'm going to go with Arizona State here, actually. Where are you at this one, Nick?
I've still got Stanford left, so I'm going Stanford seven. I can't bet on Jared Haas. Just can't do it.
Okay. And where are you? I mean, you still have Stanford as well, right? Zach, who are you picking here?
Stanford is seven for me as well. Pretty much the exact same reasons as Nick.
Okay. For eighth, I guess I have Colorado. I don't like picking them this low because typically, you know, Tad Boyle seems to do better. But, you know, I'm not thrilled with the way they look on paper coming into the season. But, look, I might be missing players. I definitely think they can finish 500 or better in the conference. I think they went 12-8 last year. You know, I don't think they'll repeat that, but I definitely could see them winning 10 games. Where are you at on this eighth place, Zach?
At Arizona State, eighth.
Okay. Does that go for you too, Nick, or are you somewhere else on?
Yeah, I've got ASU eighth. It is interesting that they are 51 in Torvik, much higher than I would have expected. So.
Yeah, I think it may partially might be just the way they finished last season. Okay, so the other two teams are Washington and Utah. The way I'm picking, because I think we all agree those are the two teams left. I have Washington finishing ninth, Utah finishing 10th. Nick, where are you at with those two?
Yeah, agree with that. Just think they have a little bit better personnel. Actually, kind of a lot better personnel than Utah, I think. Just so I'll go with the Huskies ahead of them.
And what about you, Zach?
Yeah, same. Huskies 9th.
Okay.
And Utah 10th.
All right. So the consensus here amongst us is for these purposes, Arizona 1, UCLA 2, Oregon 3, USC 4. You know, between 5-6, Stanford, Colorado, 7, ASU, and then 8. Who am I missing?
Well, I would say it's like then you miss Washington State, right?
Yeah, Washington State. So
5-6.
Right, seven, so eight, five, Stanford. Right, so 5-6-7, yep. Washington State, Colorado, Stanford, ASU, kind of hard to disentangle those, and then then the bottom with Washington, Utah. So yeah, I mean it's pretty clear. I think we seem to, even though I don't have SC in the top four, the consensus is the top four will be Arizona, UCLA, Oregon, USC. I mean USC's not solidly in there, maybe, and then the next group will be Stanford, Washington State, Colorado, Arizona State, and then those bottom four, Washington, Utah, Cal, Oregon State. So we pretty much agree on that for the most part, I think. So we will see how this goes. Obviously, our big error last season, Nick, when we did this, was we just did not realize how good Arizona was going to be. I mean, they came out of nowhere for us on picking, and I had stupidly picked Oregon to finish ahead of USC, and Oregon goes and finishes tied for fifth in the conference. So we did a pretty good job, I think, last year, other than just totally whiffing on Arizona, and then I had overrated Oregon. I think we're probably have a pretty good idea of how these teams are going to finish, but I would be shocked if, like, for example, Utah finished ahead of like Oregon. I mean, something like that. I think we could pretty safely say that's not going to happen. But I guess you got to play the games. So, all right,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
Any thoughts here, Nick?
Yeah, we just have to make note that Chase just loves Jared Haas as a coach. That's the big takeaway from tonight.
I'm Mr. Haas. I mean, he's a Haas man.
There you go. Any thoughts on any national title picks? You want to just quickly throw out a pick?
Do you want to go first, Zach?
Sure. I'm probably going to pick Gonzaga for like a third year in a row. I'll have to be right eventually, right? So I'm just going to keep rolling that out there until I'm correct. Drew Timmy, fifth year, it's got to be it.
Why not? You know, I'm looking at this like Torvik has Tennessee preseason number 3. I'm not sure why that would be the case. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm going to go, I know this is super trendy, but I'll just throw it out there. I'm going to go with Houston, national title pick, we'll see. What about you, Nick?
Yeah. Also going to take Houston. Just think Sasser's amazing guard, have a experienced backcourt. And their freshmen seem like the type of freshmen that are ready to impact winning right away. Combine that with Kelvin Sampson, and I think it's their year.
Yeah, and we'll have to have more of these podcasts, maybe talk about some of the national teams. And, we saw a lot of the guys who are going to be incoming freshmen during the kind of like all-star circuit last year. And, a lot of those guys are going to like Arkansas, and some are going to Baylor. And so, it's going to be a fun year. Duke obviously is like a completely new team with a completely new coach. Villanova doesn't have Jay Wright any longer. So I could see that being a downward trend program. Also, who's that big recruit that Villanova brought in that just killed it in the All-Star play? Whitmore.
Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, and I think he's hurt.
He's hurt to start the year.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a tough combo. So, all right. So look, Zach, before we get out of here, do you have any final thoughts?
No, just excited to watch some Pac-12 basketball. Excited that it's almost here.
Yep. All right. Okay. Until next time, thank you guys so much. And we will get back to you with more just kind of SC content, but Pac-12 content and some football in the next podcast. So thank you, everybody.